You're listening to the City Gospel Movement's podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world.
We believe God is already at work in your city. We're here to help you ask, what is God doing where I live, and how can I join in?
If you love your city, love the church, and believe God can do amazing things in your city, you're in the right place.
Let's get started. City Gospel Movement's family. I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Kaden.
And we have two super important things for you to know. One is to subscribe. That's the best way that you'll stay in touch with this content. And it really helps us out as we're wanting to expand this podcast and keep creating awesome content. So subscribe and...
And please help us continue this conversation after the podcast. We would love to hear from you. DM us on Instagram at City Gospel Movements.
Yes, we love hearing from people all over the place. We've heard from people from not only in our city of Portland, but Canada.
India.
I mean, it's crazy. It's so fun. So do subscribe and DM.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of the City Gospel Movement podcast. I'm Stephanie Weber, and today with us we have Aaron Pierce. Aaron is the executive director of Steiger International, a worldwide mission organization that is called to reach and disciple the global youth culture for Jesus. That's right. We are talking about the youth today. Mm-hmm. Aaron also co-leads the Lausanne Movement, their new initiative on global secularization. It's a mouthful. Mm-hmm. We'll hear about that. And Aaron was a member of the evangelical rock band No Longer Music from 2005 to 2011, preaching the gospel all over Europe, South America, and the Middle East. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you.
It's super fun to have you here.
Great to be here.
So, Aaron, I want to hear first, and I'm sure everybody else wants to know, what is Steiger, and how did you get involved, and how are you the executive director?
Okay, so Steiger... Well, Steiger is a worldwide mission organization, but it's actually a Dutch word. And the whole thing started in Amsterdam, and it started by my parents. So I was actually born and raised in Amsterdam, and my parents, it started in the early 80s. They were actually missionaries with Youth with a Mission, and they had a real burden and heart for the young people of the city. That was kind of the height of the punk rock movement in the 80s. And a lot of the young people in the city had very negative views of God and institutional religion, and especially in Europe where you see these big, beautiful cathedrals that are dead and empty on Sunday.
Right.
So that's their perception of God, just kind of a dead tradition of the past. And so they had a real burden saying, God, how can we reach these young people that aren't likely to step foot into a church? And so my dad, he's kind of an edgy, creative guy, and he started this band, at that time a punk band, as a tool.
Go where they are.
Go to their clubs, their festivals, and use that platform to share Jesus in a language that they could understand. And so they did that, and then all of a sudden they started to see many people come to Jesus from that context, and they were like, well, what do we do with all of them? And so they started a Bible study on a big red boat behind Central Station in Amsterdam. And the address for that boat was Pier 14, and the Dutch word for pier is Steiger.
Oh,
so, Steiger 14 was the literal address of a Bible study that became a church, reaching young people in Amsterdam that would not normally step foot into a church.
Yeah, but they'd go to a boat.
And it was this really interesting, and that was the church I literally grew up in. Born and raised in Amsterdam, and that was the church I grew up in. And then this band that my dad had started, actually called No Longer Music, started to go to other places, started to go to communist Poland and Russia and eventually all over the world, and really had a heart to reach people, young people that wouldn't come to church. Saw a lot of people reach, a lot of people inspired. And so then the people in those places started to identify themselves with the church back in Amsterdam and said, we're Steiger Poland or we're Steiger Russia or whatever. And so this missions movement that had no strategic plan.
So organic.
Yep, just a move of God. That's literally what I grew up in. And then eventually, fast forward, of course, with a bunch of stuff in between, ended up taking over as the executive director for the mission today.
My goodness. Yeah. That is a whirlwind of a story.
Yep.
So I have to ask this question, Aaron. You are now the executive director of the ministry that your parents started. I'm sure that I am not the only person wondering, Now, how did they do that? How did this kid who grew up in Amsterdam, of all places, stay committed to his faith, not only committed to his faith, but willing to take on his parents' ministry and into this next generation? So I'd love to hear you tell that story.
Yeah, it's actually, so I have four kids of my own now, ranging from 0 to 7 years old. And so I've been wrestling with that question for my own reason. I want to raise my kids to love Jesus. And so I've been thinking about that a lot. And some of the things have kind of emerged in my thinking. One of them is that it was never just my parents' mission. It was our mission. Mm-hmm. And so we really felt as kids, as family, this was our calling. And we were drawn into it from a very young age. I remember, so I have a brother who's also in the mission, by the way. And he and I, my dad would take us on tour with the band, and we would go to these pretty intense environments that, you know, normally you wouldn't necessarily take kids, like bars and clubs and whatnot. And he would have us backstage, and then they would do their performance, and from the very beginning it was about lifting up the message of the cross. Mm-hmm. And he would bring us on stage afterwards, and my dad, and he would bring us, we'd be kids, you know, 7, 5 years old, and he would say, "These are my sons. I love them. There's nothing I wouldn't do for them. Everything I have is theirs, and I would give my life for them." And then he would say, "And this is how God feels about you."
Wow.
And he would begin to explain the gospel message, and as a little kid, experiencing that, being able to be a part of that, and then seeing tough, you know, people in these environments come and surrendering their lives to Jesus, that wrecks you in a good way.
Right.
So it was our ministry, and then we saw the power of God at work outside the church. It wasn't just this nice religious thing we did, it was real. And I saw God's power literally transform people's lives, and so I knew it was real and I wanted to be part of that. And so I don't know, that kind of thing. And then the fact that I think is really important is their private life and public life are the same. Yeah. And so, you know, as kids, I think that's huge, especially with people in ministry. And so that was a big, big part of it as well. I know there's lots of different factors, but that was huge. And then I was thinking about as well, as I grew older, my parents, there were several things that happened, but one of the things is they never made being in missions, in vocational ministry, a higher calling. It was always be obedient to whatever God calls you to. And so I went to college, studied international business, was pursuing a law degree, and I had this revelation that my whole motivation was I want to make a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. And I see so much suffering and injustice, and I thought maybe law is the approach that I'll take. And I had this revelation that all injustice, all evil, all problems of the world is a result of one thing, and that's sin. Mm-hmm. And there's
separation
only one,
God.
Yeah. And there's only one solution to sin, and that's the message of the cross. And I thought, I'm going to give myself to that. And so it was through that revelation and kind of my own way that I end up joining the mission.
So that's a fantastic just picture for so many of us that have kids that are wanting to engage them in our vision and passion. And I love that idea of one life. We live this life. And if you hear that sound right now, it's because we're at an airport, and somehow we got the studio that's on the landing strip side. So it's just this. You're in Portland.
That's
we just
right.
keep it weird
yep.
here, and that's how we do
exactly.
podcasts. But talk to me now about what you're most passionate about with reaching the youth culture of today, and how do you feel that you guys are uniquely set up to do that?
Yeah. Well, I guess, first of all, I don't think we're anything uniquely special. So, and I've been wrestling a lot with that. So this global youth culture is so unique because they're more connected than ever before. They share so many similar worldview, and generally they have this kind of secular humanistic worldview where God has been replaced, man is at the center. It's all mm-hmm. about kind of being true to yourself and following your truth, whatever that means. And yet, at the
and
same time...
And not imposing any of your thinking on
exactly.
someone else, right?
Like, that's the whole secular thing. Secular doesn't mean that everyone's an atheist. What it means is you privatize and marginalize your views, your religious views, and you don't push those on others.
Yeah.
And so that's like the real thing, to the point where it's completely incoherent, because you can't hold these things, even though they're contradictory, we try to hold both of them true. Mm-hmm. But I think the heart is that there's more and more, there seems to be a divide between the church and this global youth culture, and there can almost become an us versus them mm-hmm. mentality. And I think that if we're gonna have any chance of reaching this global youth culture, it starts with having a broken heart. Mm-hmm. And so often we kind of have this judgmental or kind of frustrated view and instead allowing God to break our heart for people, because the extent to which our hearts break is actually the extent that we're going to do anything about it. And so for me, because I'm naturally selfish, that starts with repentance. It's saying, God, my heart actually isn't broken and I actually don't care, but I know that's not right. Would you please forgive me and break my heart? Because, man, the problem is the consequences of the global youth culture is we're seeing incredible rates of depression and suicide. We're seeing people that are so desperately searching for meaning and purpose but are not looking to the church for answers. And so we need the church to be awoken to this and their hearts to be broken. And the thing is, what's interesting is this is often sons and daughters of people that are in churches.
Absolutely.
Right? So this isn't some far off thing. This is really, really personal.
Well, the statistics are a bit crazy and scary if you really stop and look at the volume of youth leaving the church in the next 10 and 20 years, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the question of why that is, I don't know, like I don't necessarily know all the answers, but I think in the U.S. we've lived for so long, we've had this kind of nominal Christian culture where people kind of, you know, the whole idea of a form of godliness but denying its power. And I think what people so desperately want is something that's real and authentic, but what they've often experienced is kind of religion and kind of this culture. And I think people need to know and experience the real Jesus.
So let's talk about that for a second. So I love that because I totally agree. And it's been true in my own life. When I can have a real, enter their world, have a real conversation, then now that it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
I've had more faith conversations than I could have imagined. When I live in Portland, Oregon, where people say no one wants to have a faith conversation, and I've experienced the exact opposite. So how do you do that? How do you kind of move into those places and not only, you know, as an organization, but then equip people to go and do that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things we want to be is relationally present. We want to be where people are. Mm-hmm. And we also want to kind of connect at the felt need level, at the heart level. So two of the greatest felt needs of this generation is loneliness and a deep sense of meaninglessness. Mm-hmm. So even though we're more connected than ever before, we're actually more alone than ever before.
It just kind of blows your mind a little bit.
Yeah. And like there's a lot of studies that have come out with the increase in depression that actually it's not depression, it's just loneliness.
It is, yeah. And isolation.
And isolation, exactly. Yeah. And so so what we find is first, giving people a place to connect and to build and to experience real, authentic community, it blows them away. When people experience real self-sacrificing community, that you just don't, the world doesn't offer that.
That's face-to-face.
Yes, face-to-face. Yes. And then allowing people to share their stories and to ask them questions naturally lends itself to people. People are not as close as we think they are.
Right.
And totally agree. So when you just allow people to engage in relationships, so a lot of what we do, one of our models that I love the most is we have what we call community house. So in a city, we'll get one, two, or even a handful of homes in a youth culture area, and we'll get like big 6-7 bedroom place, and we'll fill it up with 4 or 5, you know, Christians, and then we'll have a steady flow of people, non-Christians, that are living there for periods of time and having parties and barbecues, and then inviting them to Bible studies. But it's done within the context of community, intentional community, and we find that all the walls break down in that context. And that we have amazing conversations through that. So that's been a really powerful tool.
That is so cool. You know, we just talked with Raphael Ansberger from France, and he was telling us about a WeWork space, a shared workspace that is turning itself into a church at
that's
night
cool.
and doing happy hour church. You know, and so that kind of paradigm shift. So talk to me a little bit more about just how you're shifting some paradigms of evangelism,
sure.
really, is what, would you consider that to be true?
Yeah,
or,
I
or
guess
where
so.
Are the paradigm shifts that you see, well, or either that you're doing or that are necessary?
I think within the context of the U.S., the challenge is because it's different. Europe is a, you know, post-Christian for quite a while. The U.S. has become post-Christian. And so many of our models and heroes of evangelism are from the era when we lived in a Christian culture and when the vast majority of people had a certain concept of who Jesus is and the Bible and a certain view of the world, where now we live in a post-Christian culture and we can't assume those things to be true anymore.
Kids aren't going to Sunday school or vacation Bible school anymore.
No, and they're not even identifying as a nominal Christian anymore.
Right.
And the fastest growing religious group in the U.S. is the religiously unaffiliated. But that's not necessarily bad, that's just different.
Right.
And so people see the world differently. So we, like, I think one of the challenges is our models of the past just come to us, come to the church event, and and whereas there's more and more people today who are so disconnected from church culture that they're never going to be invited, and we've got to go to them, and we got to be where they are, which is really what Jesus did. And so to me, it's having a missional approach within your own city. That's what's more needed today in the U.S. than ever before.
And how do you encourage people to do that? Like, what are the ways that either, you know, my Gen X generation or the generations behind me can do that in their city? How do you encourage people to do that?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different practical ways. I always feel like everything starts with allowing God to break your heart and then pray. Because as you pray, He reveals. Like, why? Don't ask me, ask God. Like, He knows. But a lot of it then comes to finding a place to be relationally present, to being where they are. And present doesn't mean that you've always come with an agenda. It means you're there. It means you develop relationships. Mm-hmm. But then your heart breaks, and so you want them to know the truth. And so you're asking God, how can I communicate the truth? But it's no longer like a concept. It's real people that you have real relationships with. One of the problems, I think, in the church today is we don't have a lot of relationships with people who aren't Christians. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about evangelism, it's kind of this concept rather than a real person in our mind who we love. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing is just be present, find a way to connect. We do a lot with art and music, so we do a lot in going into the scene, the art scene. But for just your average person, you are knowing our neighbors, inviting our neighbors over and developing relationship with them is a pretty simple way to get to know someone, to be relationally present. And then all the like evangelism models take on a different form because we actually have real people in our minds.
Yeah. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we throw the model out
entirely,
right?
No.
It just creates a different context for it.
Yep.
So tell me a little bit more about Steiger and what kind of things you guys are doing, things that you're really excited about, what's kind of new and upcoming for your organization.
Well, our heart is to, we establish teams in cities that are specialist at reaching the global youth culture. Because the church, whether it's in the U.S. or around the world, generally struggles to reach the global youth culture. We want to go into a city, train and equip the church, reach and evangelize the global youth culture, and bring them together. That's our purpose.
Nice.
And so historically, we started in Europe. We've got things happening in all over Latin America, but also in the Middle East. I think that's one of the things I'm pretty excited about is how actually the global youth culture has created opportunities to reach people in traditionally unreached places.
Yeah, tell us more about that.
Well, for me, actually the whole idea of global youth culture really came to light when I was part of a rock band and we were touring and we went to Iraq. And this is actually like 6-7 years ago. And we went to Iraq and we're going to perform outdoor concerts sharing the gospel. And before I was like, how in the world is a rock band going to work in this Muslim context in Iraq? And what I found when we got there is all these young Iraqis had seen like rock bands on YouTube and were so excited that
somebody was coming.
Yes. And so the platform that we had and the ability to communicate the gospel through the unlikely tool of a rock band in Iraq totally blew my world. And it showed how even in the Muslim world, young people are influenced by this global culture and it's creating opportunities to reach them entirely different ways. And so we actually have a team in Beirut, Lebanon, that's the kind of the headquarters of reaching globalized Middle East youth because it literally is a brand new way of engaging the Muslim world. So I think that's something I'm super excited about.
That is awesome. So how do people become a team member? Like, what is that process to go from, say, maybe you're just graduated college in Holland and you're heading off to the Middle East?
Well, we have a lot of things where we do seminars and workshops, but the culminating piece of our training is called the Steiger Mission School, and it's in Germany. About 10 years ago, we were able to get this old communist agricultural center and convert it into a mission school. And so now we have, it's this little village of 400 people, but we'll have about 100 students from all over the globe, literally from 15 countries
around the world. You're saving the village,
basically. Yeah. We're a strange, at first they had no idea who we were. Now we've kind of
now
got,
that you're buying
we've
a lot
won
of
their
pastries.
Favor.
Yeah, you're
exactly,
getting.
exactly. But we have people from all over the world that have a real heart for the global youth culture that are trained. Our kind of the three core values of our principles. One is seeking God, that Paul said in 1 Corinthians 2:1-5 that he preached Christ and him crucified so that people would not be convinced by human wisdom but by God's power. Mm-hmm. And what this culture needs is to experience the power and reality of God.
Amen.
And that starts by desperately seeking him. One of our verses, Hebrews 11:6, God rewards those who seek him with an earnest heart. So we, at our mission school, we actually do a complete media fast. No, it's
hallelujah.
It's crazy because people are like literally addicted.
Yes.
But no phones, no internet. We get 1 hour of internet a week to like email our family at home. But we want to disconnect and really seek the Lord.
How long do they do that?
10 weeks.
Yeah. Oh my
it's
gosh,
great.
You could write a book on that.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's such, it ends up becoming, it's funny because people come in wanting and knowing they're doing that.
Yeah.
But after a week, you realize how addicted you are. Like you can't help but trying to find ways to cheat the system.
Yeah.
But it becomes something that distracts us from our relationship with God.
Yeah.
And so that's a big part. We have Sundays are Seek God Days, spend the entire day alone seeking the Lord. Because we feel like everything stems from that. Anything that we're going to do, it doesn't matter how persuasive we are, how slick of a strategy we have. If God's power is in it, it doesn't matter. So we teach and model that. And then we have teachers that come from all over the globe who are practicing reaching global youth culture, and they train and teach people things from apologetics and models of evangelism and discipleship. And then the last thing is we go out and we actually do it. So we're on the streets sharing Jesus, starting informal Bible studies, and putting into practice what we're learning. And then out of that, that's where people go, and then they start city teams in cities around the world. So
wow.
Yeah.
And you'll take 100 at a time every 10 weeks.
No, we have 2 schools, and the capacity's at both schools. Actually, this year we had 120, but we're trying to figure that out because we're kind of running out of space. But
wow. So would you say that this is kind of catching on? Like you're not able to keep up with the demand of the youth that are coming to you and saying, I want to participate in this?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's been a challenge. It's funny because one of the things we've been praying for years is what Jesus asked us to pray, the harvest is plentiful, the workers are few. I believe that so many people in the global youth culture are hungry and searching for the answers. We just need to go.
Yeah.
And so we've been praying, God, send us people that we need to send into the harvest. And man, we're seeing it now. But it's a challenge for sure. But the needs are so great. And I'm more convinced than ever that if God wants to do this, he's going to do it anyway. Because sometimes there's that burden, like how can we carry the weight of all this? But he's got to do it. And
yeah.
And so we've seen some pretty cool stuff happening where God is opening up doors to share Jesus with these young people all over the globe. So it's exciting.
What do you want church leaders, let's just talk about U.S., what do you want pastors to know about the youth culture of today? And because I know for a fact so many pastors are struggling.
Yeah.
We just got a note from a pastor in our own city that was really hard to read because he was burdened by the fact that so many of the youth of his church had left.
Yeah.
And he really didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So what do you say to pastors that are almost in a bit of a panic situation?
Yeah, we get that a lot. We talk to a lot of pastors. Actually, so our work started in Europe, and we've done a lot of stuff overseas. We felt, because of how the culture in the U.S. has become post-Christian, that we need to be doing stuff in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually just beginning to bring what we do to the U.S. But I think, I don't know, there's a lot I would say. I feel like a lot of the pastors I talk to they have a real heart for this, real burden, but I think the answer doesn't lie in strategy.
Mm-hmm.
It were like, here's your 5-step process to reaching millennials and Gen Z.
Right.
The process the process starts with saying, God, we desperately need you.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the answers, and would you break our heart? Because that foundation, mm-hmm. What I see in a lot of churches is the pastor wants to do something, but most of the time you're dealing with politics and
programs
and the color of the carpeting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I feel like before we talk strategy or methodology or apologetics or whatever is we need God to break the hearts of the people in our church. And the thing we mentioned already, it's their sons and daughters, it's their
mm-hmm.
grandkids, and
mm-hmm.
say, God, I will sacrifice my desires, my needs, so that we can reach people. And so I feel like what we need first is our hearts broken? Mm-hmm. And then, okay, now let's talk strategy. Now let's make sure that we go where they are. Let's learn their language, not assume that what I say they're understanding. And then let's begin to challenge the assumptions that they have about the world. But all of that is preceded by a broken heart. Mm-hmm. So that to me is what I always talk about with pastors. You got to get the people to have a broken heart for the lost.
Yeah. No, I think that's so good. You know, it's that idea of just intercessory prayer. When we start in that process, then we start to see people the way God sees them. And Greg Steer was just saying this a couple days ago about, he has a friend that calls it the Toyota truck syndrome. You know, when you're thinking about buying a car, and then all of a sudden you see it everywhere.
Yes, yes.
And it's the same thing, right? Yes. When we start intercessing for the lost, for the youth culture, now all of a sudden our eyes will be open to see them differently and engage, ideally engage them differently.
The one of the models, biblical models I love is Nehemiah. Because Nehemiah was made aware of the problem. And I think a lot of us in the church in the U.S. are aware there's a problem. But what did Nehemiah do? It says in Nehemiah 1, verse 4, he says that when I heard these things, I wept and I fasted and for some time. So that his response was a broken heart. And then he spent, some scholars say, months in prayer. And that's the whole thing. If we serve the creator of the universe who loves these people more than we do, so go to him and say, God, what do you want us to do? And he will speak. He will reveal. And he'll create opportunities. And I guess I'm just nervous of the idea of it being a methodology, because it never is. It's all, well, unless the methodology is seek God desperately and obey. And so
that's a good methodology.
That's a good methodology, yes.
We'll take that one.
Yeah.
So, Aaron, what are you doing with Lausanne? And tell us a little bit about that relationship and where that's headed.
So Luke Greenwood, our European director, and I are leading this. And it's basically similar to what we've already talked about, is that what's interesting is that this whole global youth culture, and particularly the secular humanistic worldview that it brings, is prevalent all over the world. And even when, you know, whether it's the Muslim world or the Hindu world or other places where people are nominally subscribed to a particular religious view, they're the way they live and the worldview is actually secular humanism. And so it creates these both challenges and opportunities, because kind of the traditional way of reaching a Muslim doesn't apply. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be engaging them through more like secular humanism, apologetics, and things of that nature. So our heart is just to make that known and equip the church to understand how much this is influencing the world and how it's creating opportunities for the gospel to go forth in traditionally unreached places.
So. And how do you feel that message is kind of disseminating itself across cultures and Europe and the U.S.? How are you guys at Lausanne trying to kind of bring that message to the bigger
things
audience?
Things like this, you know, just as often as we can, just, you know.
Bang the drum.
We, like us as a mission, we're way too small to accomplish what the needs out there. So we want to see the missions king, because my feeling is the global youth culture and the secular humanistic mindset that it brings is affecting pretty much all spheres of missions.
Yeah.
And so it's something that we all need to be thinking about. And so our heart is just like, we as the church need to be thinking about this and needing to be figuring out how to respond. And whether, you know, you're called to reach Hindus in India, this is still relevant and something to be thinking about. So that's our heart. And so we're just trying to cast the message as wide and as far as possible. So
I think it's awesome. I love your energy. Like, I wish people were right here, because you could just see Aaron's passion and energy. I want to talk just a second about the word evangelism.
Okay.
You use it, and don't shy away from it, in the context of this youth culture.
Yeah.
I have a question about why is that, and do you feel that that word has still stayed relevant in this, in how people receive it?
Well, it depends who I'm talking to. So if I'm talking to a Christian, I may use the word evangelism. I'm certainly not going to use it when I'm talking to a secular person.
So break that apart for me.
Well, it's all about know your audience, and communication is simply a matter of you understanding what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So if evangelism is a barrier to you, I'm not going to use that word, because what I'm trying to do is convey a message. So that actually is a really good point when it comes to talking to people from a secular perspective, is we often use a lot of Christianese because we have this kind of just Christian vocabulary that we think communicates, but it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about knowing your audience and not using words that do. Sometimes they carry just baggage that we sometimes aren't aware of, but evangelism is a word within the Christian context that is a I mean, it's incredibly important. So it's just, to me, it's a word that communicates, and it's about knowing your audience.
So Aaron, what's next for your organization? Like, when you think about, gosh, in 5 years, this is something I'm, whether it's for your organization or a collective effort, right, of people that are trying to reach this global youth culture, what are those things that are kind of stir? I love asking this question because I know you have really big ideas because you wouldn't be doing this work if you didn't. So what are some of those big, crazy, like, oh my gosh, if this could happen?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we got our vision. Honestly, it's not something I've been wrestling with because I'm so, on a personal level, I wrestle with that tension between human ambition and wanting to see the work go forward, but then knowing it has to be in His power. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the global youth culture is the greatest challenge and opportunity facing the church today.
And it is the largest amount of youth that the earth has ever seen.
Yeah. And they're a unified culture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it can get controversial on the whole unreached culture group, but this, in one way, it's one of the largest unreached cultures ever to exist.
Right. Now, and I actually really like that perspective because I think it's helpful to kind of go, because when we hear that word unreached people group, we're often thinking way off distant land.
Yeah.
And it's right in front of us here.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. In every city.
It's everywhere. Yeah. And so I feel like this is the greatest challenge facing, or greatest challenge and opportunity. So my heart, as a mission, we want to see city teams all over the globe. We want to see millions and millions of people reach. But my heart is that the church would learn to communicate the love of Jesus, the truth of Jesus to the global youth culture, that we would be part of a movement of being able to communicate the gospel to this culture, and that we, like, it's not hopeless. It's not, we don't have to kind of resign ourselves, say we're going downhill and we just better accept it. Like, I want to see the church rise up and communicate the truth, because young people in the U.S. and around the world are searching for something of meaning and purpose and substance. They're just not walking into the church to find it, but they're looking for it.
That's right.
So that's it.
That's awesome. And I think that, you know, the reason that there's so much passion in that is, I'm guessing here, making an assumption, but it's because you've seen kids' lives changed and youth changed.
Absolutely.
So tell us a few of those little stories, just those nuggets, because I know that's what keeps me so hopeful.
Yes.
Is like, oh, wait, I'm seeing unbelievable things happen.
Yes.
But in a culture, in a context where lots of people are saying, you know, we're going down.
Yeah.
So share a few of those stories.
I think my favorite are always the ones that not only come to Jesus, but then they become just on fire and disciples who make disciples who make disciples.
Yes.
Those are my favorite. So a couple of those, there's a guy, his name's Moa from Sao Paulo, Brazil, and he was a pretty influential guy in the hip hop scene in Sao Paulo and kind of rock world. And so he was at a nightclub with his band performing one time, and on stage was a guy, turned out he was one of our missionaries, and he was sharing the message of Jesus. And he felt such power and authority in the message that he came up to him afterwards and said, "Man, I want to preach that message." And so our missionary was like, "Oh, well, what church are you from?" Just kind of assuming he was a Christian. He said, no, I'm not a Christian, but I just love your message. And so he's like, "Well, if you want to share Jesus, you need to know him first." And so Moa said what every missionary wants to hear, which is, "Well, can you teach me?"
Yeah.
And so Moa is what we call in our missions a scene guy, which means he's in the scene. Everyone knows him. He knows everyone. That's just that gifting. And so he invited this guy to come to a Bible, to their rehearsal, and to lead a Bible study. And he brought all his friends, and they started to study the Bible. They just opened it up and just read through it. And it was one of those powerful things where they're reading like the story of the prodigal son, and it's a story we've all heard a million times. But to these guys who have no church background, they're like,
fresh.
They're like, "Wow, this is so amazing!" And they grew, and then we had a church partner in Sao Paulo where they end up going to that church, and they were baptized, discipled. Then Moa and his wife went to our mission school a few years later, were trained, and now Moa is one of our most dynamic evangelists that we have in our mission, and leading people to the Lord constantly. We have 15 Brazilians at our mission school right now because he led them to the Lord. And so it's just that those are the cool stories of disciples who make disciples who make disciples. So that's how you see movements happen. So
I love that. I want to tell that story. Well, wait a second. Do you know Jesus?
Yeah.
No. But I want to tell that story.
you need to get to know Jesus first. So,
Oh, I love it. Yeah. It's so fantastic. I cannot thank you enough for sharing
my privilege.
Your voice and your experience. And we need more of that. We need more of the hope. right? And more of the possibilities of engaging with this culture. So thank you so much.
Thank
you. People want to learn more about Steiger and what you guys are doing, where would you send them?
Just our website, steiger.org, so steiger.org.
Right. Steiger.
Mm-hmm.
It's doc or it's?
Peer, yes.
Steiger
Peer. We'll do
Peer.
A quiz later.
Yeah, that's right. My Dutch is not so good, but yours is probably quite good.
You speak better Dutch than English.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much and bless you and your ministry. We're
thank
so
you.
Thankful to be in your presence and have Steiger as a partner.
Thank you very much.
All right.
That was such a good conversation. To stay in touch with the latest content, just remember to subscribe. That is the best and easiest way to stay in touch with the City Gospel Movement's content. And, Kaden?
Yes, and please, if you want to keep this conversation going, DM us on Instagram at City Gospel Movements.
We love hearing from you.
Thank you for listening to the City Gospel Movements podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world. For more resources, show notes, and to get connected to gospel movements around the globe, visit citygospelmovements.org. That's citygospelmovements.org. Keep believing in what God can do in your city.